From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project gets underway with an opportunity for you to have us in your ear for a half hour. We hope we do a good job of giving you analysis, commentary, and maybe even some insight into the media issues of the past week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Alan, wonderful to see you.
And likewise, I'm sure.
I'm sure. And as well with Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette.
And likewise.
Of course, that's all we need to say. Likewise.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Do you have anything to say, Ira? Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Charmed, I'm sure.
Charmed. He's charmed. He is indeed. We have a lot to talk about. Perhaps we ought to start this week with something local. One of the major stories on playing in the national media has originated in our community, not far from where we're sitting here in New York's capital region, and that is, of course, the tragic accident of a limousine carrying 17 passengers. A single accident causing 20 deaths has brought national media to the capital region as well has created quite a challenge for local media to cover. Any initial thoughts, panel, on how this has gone?
Well, I'm interested from a media point of view of how well everybody's done. Your paper's done great stuff. They've been looking and asking for documentation in terms of whether the car itself was legal, whether the driver was legal, and you've been getting a lot of good stuff. WAMC, the station where we're sitting today, sent... It was very interesting. A whole bunch of people showed up here at the radio station. They didn't have to, and they went out, and they went four or five different ways, and I've encouraged them to put their stuff in for a radio award, as I'm sure you're doing for the Times Union, Rex. So it's interesting that this is a story that a lot of people were covering from a lot of different directions.
You know, what I found is fascinating is the intersection of local and national media. Because, you know, if you're a local radio station or a local TV station or newspaper, you sometimes get annoyed when the national guys come in and kind of cherry pick your big story. But this has been interesting because I have seen the national guys come in and do the big story. And they do a nice job of writing a really comprehensive story, but they tend to gloss over and then they walk away. And it's the local news operations. They give you the depth, and then they give you the continuing coverage that I think the people in the local area are craving in this instance.
Yeah, I'm struck by what Alan said about how many people he put on it and this station put on the story. And typically smaller newspapers, community newspapers, which are hard-pressed to staff stories just routinely. When a story of this magnitude occurs, it's all hands on deck. You do have to forego other stories you might otherwise be covering, but it typically shows that smaller news operations have the ability, not necessarily the wherewithal, but the ability to cover stories. They flood the zone, and they can do stories that are award-winning type of stories, to the surprise, I think, often, of the readers who are used to seeing them just cover the town board.
I think that's true. You know, it's to the surprise even of the newsrooms themselves.
Yes.
People don't know what they're capable of doing until they really are pushed into it, and it really demonstrates the capacity sometimes that you have in newsrooms. It's interesting to me, too, that in this era when we have so much criticism of the media, so much distrust generated a lot of it from the highest office in the land, you don't hear people talking about fake news when it comes to this kind of a story. Same principles are going on here. People are trying to get the news. People are going after the reporting, doing the kind of truth-telling work that is being done every day at the White House. But it's different when the audience bias is not present. The only bias of the audience in this case is wanting to know what's going on. And I wish we could have that occupying our political zone as well. You know?
But I was very interested, Rex, in Judy's analysis of the big guys coming in, the national guys coming in, and the local guys. Now, in our case, because we do know this area so well, NPR, you know, relied on us to have the voices of the material that people were going to hear all over the country. NPR doesn't like to do that. They like their own guys. They have their own people around. But it's extraordinary that when the crush comes to crunch, you know, they really do use the local people if they have to.
That I do have to confess being a little annoyed about with the national media is the tendency to pick up our reporting without attribution.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the when we do, we dig out these documents that show, as Alan was saying, the violations by the limousine company and so on. Then within an hour, it's on ABC News without saying the Times Union reported.
and the reality also is that once those big media outlets take over the story, then when you go search the story on Google or any of the search platforms, they take over. And the local reporting flushes to the bottom really, really quickly. And that's unfortunate because they're doing the real work.
Well, you know, Rex makes a very good point, and I have to say in his favor that even when I hear something on our air that I know has been lifted from either your old newspaper, Judy, or Rex's newspaper, I don't like it. I think it's so easy just to do the attribution. You just say, today's Times Union or today's Schenectady Gazette has said. I don't see any reason not to do that.
Well, and you know, we do it all the time. We've gotten kind of strict about it at the Times Union because we've seen it applied to us so often, and so we attribute things to competing media. One of our failures, actually, in this particular story, the day of the accident, the accident occurred in the afternoon on a Saturday. We didn't send a photographer to the scene. So we had to take a screenshot from CBS 6, the CBS affiliate here in the Capital Region that did do that. And, of course, we attributed it to them. When it's a visual, you have to do that. So we can all benefit from each other's work in a situation like this.
I saw an example, and I think I have this right. I'm not in the newsroom anymore, but Rex's columnist Chris Churchill did an interview with a candidate for Congress from the 19th District, and he came down to Kingston, interviewed her in a local diner, and I don't know if he was accompanied by a photographer or had his own camera, but the picture you use I subsequently saw in my former newspaper in a story that it had done about the same person, and I was
Who was that person? Why don't you name
her? Her name is Diane Neal. She's the third person in a three-way race. The PS to the story is I was very curious to see if the Times Union got the photo credit. No, it was the AP that got the photo. AP apparently picked up your picture, and it was distributed as an AP picture. And that's one of the joys and horrors of being part of a cooperative.
Right. And so when you're a cooperative, you share your content. But when you ever have a big case like this, you get every media outlet that will say, we want to use your photo. We'll give you credit. Hmm. Well, at some point, the local paper is saying, I want more than credit. I want some money for this.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
Do you think it's getting better or worse?
In other words,
this spirit of, you know, I watch C-SPAN or I watch CNN giving credit to Fox for something that they're using. I don't know that we would have seen that in the old days. I think there's more of it now.
Well, one of the great advantages of the digital age is that you can link directly to the original content, and that is now being incorporated into codes of ethics, saying that this is really the ethical way to do journalism, is to link to the real story, where it comes from.
The downside of that for the paper that's linking is you're taking the reader away from your site and bringing them into another site, which they might like better than yours.
Yeah. Yes, we have that. All right. So we appreciate, by the way, hearing from you with your thoughts about this. media@wamc.org is how you intersect with the Media Project. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith here with you today. We have to take a little shot, if you don't mind, at USA Today, one of our few national publications in this country. Media in the United States tend to be dispersed and locally based. But USA Today has a national footprint, and they turned over a chunk of their op-ed page, the page opposite the editorial page, to the President of the United States. A bylined piece by Donald J. Trump appeared in the paper on October 10th on opposition to proposals to expand Medicare to all Americans, which is a big issue for Democrats these days. And the president took a shot at this. And it is interesting. Here I'm reading a story by Glenn Kessler of The Washington Post, who runs their fact-checking team there, who says that the piece, in which almost every sentence contained a misleading statement or a falsehood.
otherwise known as a lie.
Yes, exactly. So what do you make of this? What is with USA Today letting the president, okay, Alan, lie on their opinion page?
It does not speak well of USA Today, and they are getting a wagon load of people who are very angry about what they did. And we are talking about the people in the press who are turning on, you know, USA Today and saying, you shouldn't have done it.
So if the president called you today, Rex, and said, I want to put an op-ed in the Times Union, here it is, would you run it unedited?
No. We actually had a circumstance like that a couple of weeks ago when Senator Schumer's office called and wanted us to run an op-ed. We looked at it and we thought, you know, it's a press release. It is basically just an opportunity for him to brag about a particular issue that we had already written about. It wasn't that there was anything untrue in it. It's just that it wasn't illuminating at all. There was nothing new. And the second issue actually is not just promotional and taking stuff just because people offer it to you. The second thing is we don't allow anything that is untrue into our opinion pages if we know that.
So what if it wasn't an op-ed? He sent it in as a letter to the editor. Would that make a difference?
Same standard. People are allowed to express their opinion, but not to make up facts.
Well, I think, Rex, in all due deference to you, that's a little bit of a risky, subjective issue. You know, I think that Donald Trump gets on the television virtually nightly at these stupid rallies and, you know, gets the people going and the rest of it. And there doesn't seem to be anybody on the other side who is going the other way. I mean, very little. So if Chuck Schumer writes a letter and says, this is our position on this, I would disagree. I would think you'd want to run to either get the letter or the op-ed piece in.
Well, we don't run the rallies of the president. And actually, interestingly enough, Fox News is now breaking away, and they're not running all of his rallies all the time. So there is plenty of opposition. I think you're wrong that the president is allowed to just say whatever he wants whenever he wants. There's plenty of opportunity. In fact, that's why the White House is so ticked off at the media, because the truth-telling apparatus of the news media is stopping this. USA Today seems to have violated that norm, right?
And it seems like one big campaign ad for Republicans running for Congress, because if you're paying any attention at all to the advertisements for congressional candidates on the Republican side, this health care issue and the concern about Medicare is one of their primary issues, and they're beating this home. And I almost think that USA has an obligation to give the same amount of space to an opposing side, although I don't know what good it would do at this point.
So, Judy, you agree, though, with Rex, as a former editor of a paper, you agree with Rex that Schumer's op-ed, even though it didn't contain any lies, should not have been printed?
I didn't see it, but I would say when I was an editor, one of the issues is there's got to be a reason for it. It's got to do more than just state a case. They've got to have a viewpoint. They've got to advance the issue.
Well, I'm assuming they did.
I don't know. It could have just been rehashing the same old things that he's been saying before. It has to really be timely. It has to be informative, and it has to have a perspective. And it can't have lies in it. I mean, this President Trump op-ed had clear lies in it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, a politician especially has so many other avenues for getting their point of view across that when you turn over your columns to them under their byline, that's really giving them an unfair advantage that ordinary citizens
don't have. You know, Rex, it is interesting that almost every day now we are seeing an op-ed by somebody from either group, either Republicans or Democrats. The Times does it. The Washington Post does it. I dare say you do it. In the old days, columnists were columnists and politicians were politicians, but now we're seeing a lot of this.
Well, I don't know. You remember Eleanor Roosevelt had a newspaper column?
My day.
My day, is that what it's called? Yeah. How about that?
I thought you said it was in your day.
That's true, too.
That's also true. Right.
Well, if you've ever been to Hyde Park, where they have the statue of Eleanor and Franklin sitting just having a cup of tea, there's a little tiny baby next to them. That's Alan. He's part of the statue. That's
I resent nice. That more than I can say.
You know, but if you raise
an interesting... I believe that was Fala, actually.
Oh, that was...
You raise an interesting
I resent
point,
that too.
Alan.
Yeah, yeah.
In the fact that the New York Times published the anonymous op-ed that was very critical of the Trump administration. Now, they weren't able to confirm any of that, but they did run it. So on that matter, I tend to agree with you.
Well, you know what? It's very subjective. I mean, you know, Rex and his editorial board are sitting there and they're making a decision based on what they think is right. It's their sense of what is right and what is wrong. So I get that. I mean, it's very subjective, which is why I think it's very dangerous.
Mm. True. In that case, it is subjective, and it is one of the few places where, although the facts themselves are not, the reason why we're criticizing USA Today is not because they let the president have space. It's because they let the president have space to tell lies.
Many lies.
I'm interested that he chose to use USA Today or any newspaper to provide an op-ed, because it's just contrary to so many things, not the least of which is the fact that not as many people read newspapers as they used to. And what I take out of that, and there are other examples, not necessarily him, that they send in op-eds knowing that that is going to be a springboard for the cable networks. In an op-ed today in the New York Times, so-and-so happened, and that's what gives that piece air and mm-hmm. juice.
Mm-hmm. And the people should know that probably the president didn't actually write that himself.
Yeah. I think probably is an understatement.
Absolutely. Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok, and Rex Smith here on the Media Project. We turn to a bit of foreign affairs, let's say, although it involves a man who's been living in the state of Virginia writing for The Washington Post. His name is Jamal Khashoggi. He's the guy, the opinion contributor for The Post for the past year. He's the Saudi citizen who went into an embassy, let's say, and never came out again. He has disappeared and apparently has been murdered in Turkey. This is creating an international incident, and the question is, what is the administration, if anything, doing about it?
The reason that this is so important is because it deals with the fundamental question of a free press. Here's a guy who is a writer for the Washington Post, and it is an insult that you would kill somebody who is disseminating an opinion that the Saudis don't like. And you even see it with Donald Trump, who tends to side with the Saudis and not with anybody else, and it was a great friend of theirs. But I think this is so dangerous because of the freedom of the press aspect that even the Trumpistas are being careful about it.
And the Saudis were so brazen about it, they made no effort to really cover their tracks. They're sending a message to everybody who dares to express any dissidence that, you know, you better shut up or you're going to end up in
body parts.
Right.
Well, this is a guy who he's one of the best known journalists in Saudi Arabia. And in the past, he was very close to the Saudi royal family. But then he began to object to things that were going on under the new young crown prince. And his column in the newspaper over there, Al Hayat, was canceled. And so the government banned him from Twitter. And so then he started to write for The Washington Post and came to Virginia. And it is now kind of a remarkable thing to contemplate that the Trump administration has based a lot of its foreign policy in the Middle East on this alliance with Saudi Arabia, which we know to be a repressive regime. But this is a president who has pledged to foreign leaders, to despots and dictators, that, you know, it's your business. We're not going to try to tell you what to do with your government. So is he then going to say the United States is not going to stand up when journalists are murdered by our occasional friends? I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, where Trump has, as of this taping, Trump has certainly not spoken out in the manner that one would expect a United States president to speak out if one of its people, one of its citizens, and a journalist is murdered, as appears to have been the case here. But it would be unfair to lay this event at the feet of Trump, except for the fact that Trump's constant barrage of criticism of the press and of fake news and of the enemy of the people seems to have given license to dictators around the world to do the same and then some in their own countries. And this is something that this country is supposed to be standing up for the freedom of the press and should be speaking out and more if, in fact, this occurred as it appears to have occurred. And Trump, as we speak, is doing quite the opposite.
That's actually a profound statement, which I want to associate with myself. unusually so.
Profound. You know, when you get to be a certain age, I think the word profound can attach more easily. It's a wonderful thing. Margaret Sullivan is the media writer for The Washington Post, a longtime editor of The Buffalo News before that, and then she became the last of the public editors of The New York Times before
which
going to
deserves
Post.
Some attention from this panel, which we have given it before, that you would set up a public editor who would investigate whether the stories were fair, and then the heat may get a little too hot, you get rid of the position.
Well, they kept it for 12 years, so I think the heat was hot from the get-go, but I think they decided that there might be a different way to approach it.
Which is what, Rex?
Invalid question.
The interaction that the digital world affords the newspaper is such that the newspaper can hear from their readers without necessarily having one person
Ira. You see, you blew it. You had a profound
Well, you know, they're not alone in this.
Before.
I mean, ESPN had a...
That's right, they're not.
No, it seems to be a trend away from that.
From responsibility.
No, from a way of doing this whose time has passed in search of other ways of doing it.
You guys are such apologists for anything that anybody ever does in the press. You say, it's okay, I'll give you the other side. Shame on you, Ira.
Somebody has to do it.
You know, there's a little bit of crowdsourcing of criticism of the press now on Twitter and on other forms of social media, but you don't get the skilled expertise of a Marco
that's
Sullivan.
That's right.
That's a pretty good point. That said,
I win that round?
okay. One
you win a new car.
So here's the point about raising the name of Margaret Sullivan, because we digress, is that this very intelligent critic of press behavior is raising the question about whether we are doing enough to cover climate change, because there is this dire report that has come out from the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that says that really we need a type of rapid response such as the world has never seen on any issue if we're going to avert disastrous levels of global warming. And Margaret Sullivan's point is this. She said, quote, "We need to figure out how to best make the main thing matter. Just as the smartest minds in earth science have issued their warning, the best minds in media should be giving sustained attention to how to tell this most important story in a way that will create change."
You know what? She is so right. The fact is, I was thinking about it. In fact, in a recent commentary, I said, to quote myself, you know, that this idea that we put a kid in prison for robbing a candy store and we say, you know, impeachment should go to the highest level. Here is a president who denies climate change. You mean that's not an impeachable offense, wiping out the world potentially? So I think she's right. I think this doesn't get enough attention. Nobody gives it the attention it really deserves.
You know, the challenge is to make it interesting and to make it something people will actually read and observe. People are clearly interested in the weather. We probably have all seen that. But those stories, as someone who's watched real-time consumption of news media, those climate stories do not get the kind of engagement with readers that they should. So it's on us, it's on the media, to do it right.
Yes, but when we watch, and I do, and you do apparently, Judy, and maybe even Ira does, you watch the news and you see this terrible Michael storm. So it's at that point that somebody on the air says, and this is what has happened, the ocean is now 86 degrees, which has not been before, and that is directly attributable, according to scientists A, B, and C, to what is going on.
So this is the time. I agree with you. It's been proven that ratings for places like the Weather Channel and the Network News increase during these storms when they want to, I don't know if it's because they want to see whether the reporter is going to be blown off into the ocean, but this would be the time when they have people's attention, when they're reporting the magnitude of the disaster, for them to have a segment saying, how come this is happening? How come is it happening as frequently as it's happening? How come it's getting worse? This is when you have the readers and the viewers' attention.
I appreciate your support on this.
It was profound.
So we will pat ourselves on the back for profundity around, and maybe that would encourage you to come back and join us next week. That's the Media Project. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith, we thank you. We'll see you next time.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such...
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association, and Ira Fussfeld is the Publisher Emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.